Well, you know, History Channel has a show where the subtitle is the real Stranger Things. And that was called the Dark Files, and I was involved with that show. It just played on Saturday night. It was called The Dark File.
Friday night? Shit.
Yeah, so I...
That's pretty cool.
I had a sort of a handshake agreement with a friend of mine. It's sort of like, whoever gets a big break first will help the other one. He got his big break, so he's like, come and help me on the show. So I was like one of the reenactors, and I did some crew work for him for a few days.
Shit, that's awesome.
Great show. It's a great show. Like it, you know, it was really well done, but I was really honored to have been involved with that. You know, he didn't owe me anything. He
honored your agreement, you know what I mean? Which is kind of, I don't know. I feel like that's becoming rare these days, which sounds like a movie cliche in itself, but it is true. I'm not running into as many people who will honor the sort of hallway conversation handshake agreement when it really comes time to do it. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, like, I remember talking to Dick Fisher, who photographed the Brothers McMullen, and he hates Ed Burns. Because he's like, I helped Ed Burns back in the day. And he's like, you never will talk to a more embittered man than Dick Fisher. Because he was like, I helped him choose that script. I helped him photograph it. I put my own money into it. He goes off to Hollywood. He never talks to me again. So I never want to be that kind of person if I was ever fortunate enough to make it.
Yeah,
you know, those people who helped you along the way. It doesn't mean that Dick Fisher has to be the photographer of the next movie you do. It means involve him some way. Hey,
right.
Even hire him to shoot behind the scenes stuff or something. His own documentary, anything to give that person who helped you, who gave their heart and soul into what they did, some kind of break as a thank you, and you know, as a reminder that we're
all in it together.
All in this together,
yeah.
Exactly.
The rising tide raises all ships. Like I know, like I guess. There's with the sort of the way that the world is changing. Oh, by the way, I guess we kind of are already underway here. So welcome everybody to the next episode of Spotlight on the Hollow Knight Network. I'm Dave the Clone, your ever present host, and with me today is another Dave, and I love meeting other famous Daves. We should actually go to there's a restaurant called Famous Dave's, and they give you a free steak if it's your birthday, and you go there and your name is Dave. But Long Island's own Dave Campfield, the owner, operator, CEO, and founder of Fourth Horizon. Films or Fourth Horizon Media? I'm sorry. I actually have the website right here. Fourth Horizon Cinema. I totally got the third wrong.
the third time's the charm.
Well, there we go. At least it's there and it's fully in effect. And you guys should go check it out and check out the trailers they have posted there. But welcome and thank you for joining me on our interview show.
Thank you for having me.
And so it's funny how, you know, like I never really know where I'm going to start with these things. And sometimes like the conversation just takes over on its own in the first place. But I've seen a little bit of the phenomenon we were just talking about more honored across businesses, which is going to sound weird. Let me explain it. But like my day job is a little bit separate from what we're doing here right now. They're both in the world of production, but obviously Hollow Nine's a little bit more like the, hey, if I owned a radio station or a cable network, this is the stuff that we would put out. And I travel a lot for my day job. And, you know, a lot of that the company pays for. And then every once in a while when I have to travel for this, I still use some of the vendors that I use when I travel for work. Like I use the same car company to drive me to the airport. And so I came back from Dragon Con last weekend and he and I know each other on a first name basis now. I've been using him for like 12 years. As we finally pulled up to my house after I was telling him about the trip, he was just like, hey, man, you know what? I'm not charging you for this one because I just really like that you launched your business and that you're really trying to make this Hollow Knight thing take off. So this is sort of like, you know, people give you a housewarming gift when you move into a house. This is my business warming gift for you. And I was just like, I was blown away by it because it's like where you least expect it, you have that sort of honor coming through, you know, the sort of person to person, normal people being humane to each other. And
yeah, you know, when I was doing my second film, which was done for It was a feature film done for $700, this one. And we were renting a stage in L.A. And when we were done with that day of shooting, that few hours of shooting, the guy who owned the stage said, "Guys, don't worry about it. I've been where you are. It's on the house." Which was just like what you're talking about. It's like once in a while, people really surprise you. Yeah. Unfortunately, that guy went out of business, and I blame myself.
Oh, shit. It's not all your fault, man, right? I mean, he did have other shit lined up for the days after you were there.
What's called the empty stage theater can't be that appealing to the people on the outside on the street.
Empty stage? Why am I going to watch an empty stage?
Yeah, where you pay us for a seat, and then you supply the visuals. we give you the sound. See, at least with a podcast, you know what you're getting into. We give you the sound. You bring the imagination. But yeah, if there's a stage, there better be something on the stage. Otherwise, why have it? But yeah, I mean, it's nice to know that still happens. I feel like there are times where enough of these things are not happening that it'd be very easy for somebody to kind of give up on this uphill climb that it can be sometimes.
Yeah, I think if I was most any normal or sane human being, I would have given this up a long time ago. But I'm not, you know, and I'm in this for the long haul. I've told people if I have to live out of my car to pursue this, to try to make this happen, then that's what it is. Because, you know, you're given one life unless you belong to another faith and you're given multiple.
Yeah.
But even this is the only life that we know. And why spend it doing something that makes you so unhappy? Well, the only thing that really speaks to me is spelling, telling a story, or acting, performing, all of these things. And sometimes we're our own worst enemy. The screenplay that I just completed called Awaken the Reaper, it's something that I've been working on since 2007. And it started off as a generic story about, you know, like a Reaper figure and somebody with agoraphobia. And little by little, it just became my own story, my own fears, my own. So this story, I realized all this time I took to hopefully make it universal to what I experienced and what other people experience in their daily lives. If you can make something universal, you've done what I think the audience hopes for. You know, talk to them, you know, speak to all the truths that apply to all of us. So.
Absolutely. And it's interesting how a lot of, I don't know, I find that there are times I'm trying to explain to people, which almost to me seems unthinkable, but that's because we're in this. When people don't really understand how, you know, the process can work. You know, some people will look at, well, why can't you just crank out a script in a week? I mean, that's what they're doing for
TV.
It's like that right there. You're like, well, it depends on what you're in this for. If you're in it to just be a TV writer or to be somebody who just pumps out content that has no real weight to it, sure.
I remember somebody telling me, somebody who is fairly successful in the industry, saying that, let's see how much you like this when you're forced to do it Monday through Friday, 9 to 5.
Oh yeah.
Now, and there's some truth to that. When it's done on someone else's terms, some of the magic goes out of it.
Oh yeah.
Now, and some way I've been a little fortunate that the timetable that I've had has been more or less my own. You know.
Yeah.
When that changes, sometimes it just becomes work. Like there's times I get editing jobs for like a commercial or something like that, and it starts off kind of magical, and by the end of it, you're like, "Stop giving me notes!
Yeah. I know." I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. For real. For real.
The font, point two.
Like, don't you have a finisher who could take care of that crap? Like, let me just do the main thing here, the important thing, the stuff that you're gonna release. You know, reason that you brought me in on this.
I've had the weirdest resume. I mean, I love that that's all involved with film, but I've done everything. I hosted a show for a year on Enrivio. It's like an online streaming show. I host a Troma Now podcast. I've done production assistant work on something. I've acted in stuff. I've written stuff. I've pretty much like almost all the different positions I've done at one point or the other.
Awesome. I mean, that's the best way to really understand how all of it works from the technical side, which is, I think, just as important when you're going into looking at creating, you know? And I think it's an area probably some people don't necessarily want to have to experience, but I think that's how you get to be a fuller professional at it.
I didn't make it through my college experience, but what the professors would say when I was going to film school down in Santa Fe, you know what? That school doesn't exist anymore. So there's a thread here. When I get involved with something, I just tend to destroy it.
You're like the main characters on The Walking Dead. You leave the town burning behind you as you move on to the next spot.
Never my intention, but seems to be what happens. They said, we want you to live life before you start making your own movies, because we don't want you making movies of other people's movies. And there's a lot of truth to that. You know, you have to go through life. You have to learn.
Yeah.
And you have to, you know, go through the highs and the lows just to kind of understand, you know, what it's like to be a person more. That's why, you know, I think kid actors tend to get messed up more often than not, because they don't get to live their normal life. So something could be, say, if someone's a success later in life, it's a much healthier experience.
Yeah.
I would imagine than getting successful as a kid, because you haven't seen the world for what it is.
And you're being, you're kind of having to go based on what other people are telling you or whatever tutelage you're getting. I mean, it's funny, Louis C.K., not this most recent year, maybe it was 2 years ago, he had a special on HBO, and he actually kind of, it was funny the way he talked about it, but he was saying, like, you know, a 50-year-old sanitary engineer, to be politically correct, I think he probably said garbage man, but a 53-year-old sanitary engineer knows way more than a doctorate degree graduate at 26, just because they've been alive in the world. You know, like, it's like talking, like, it would be the equivalent of somebody who lived through the horrifying moments of the Cuban Missile Crisis talking to somebody who wasn't born yet, and the person who wasn't born yet is trying to tell them what that meant. And you're like, who fucking cares, man? I went to sleep wondering if there were going to be missiles flying at us that night, you know?
At the same time, you know, minds can atrophy. You know, people tend to limit their source of information, distill it down to what they want to believe without ever objectively looking at the world. So it's a double-edged. It works two ways. You can be older and not grow. I mean, you are always growing as a person. You're not necessarily growing in objectivity.
True.
You know, a lot of people don't. You know, I drive by them and they've got some really partisan bumper stickers and stuff like that. And that kind of make any... People don't tend to question... When someone takes a side, they don't say, well, maybe my side's being a little rash on this. And that's also not, I consider, not a healthy attitude, and I think a lot of us are engaged in it on all sides.
I mean, my anyone who's following my Facebook page knows pretty clearly where my political leanings lie, but at the same time,
look at that right now.
He's like, okay, how much further are we allowed to talk before I find out if we're all good? But in general, it is kind of funny how front and center all of that has become. You know, I feel like, I don't know, I guess we're all going to blame the internet for this, which I'm also conveniently using to try to make this podcast network fly, which would be Hollow Nine Network at hollow9.com. If you don't know where you found this episode that you're listening to. It's just, to me, I remember a time where we were still able to have opinions on politics and be able to talk about other stuff.
I see your leanings. They're close to mine.
Okay, good.
I'm trying not to make enemies here. But you know,
we're
what
friends
I said,
now. Yay.
You know. Okay. So I lean against demagogues. Okay. I don't like a aggressive kind of personality. I like a diplomat.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? A John Kasich's a Republican, but he's a diplomat. Yeah. I take diplomat. I like whatever party, it doesn't matter. I take somebody who treats all human beings, or at least attempts to treat all human beings, with some level of respect, whether you disagree with them or not.
Yeah.
Party doesn't matter. Just human integrity and kindness is a big thing.
Yeah.
So,
and I think it's interesting because, I mean, people like us who lived in the world of movies, whether it's on either side of the camera or on either side of the screen, it almost feels as if the world has betrayed the fairy tale that it was selling itself for so long. You know, the idea that, like, don't worry. There's always going to be just enough of a tip of the balance in the world of the there being enough good people to outweigh the bad so that shit okay, like what's well, going on now won't happen. And me, it's fucking me, happening. We're like, well, what?
Let me put it this way. If you're a staunch Democrat and your neighbor's a staunch Republican and your house is on fire, he's going to come to your rescue. If if his house is on fire, you're going to come to his rescue. We have an intrinsic good in us with very few exceptions, like the guy who shot the Bernie Sanders supporter who went down south and did the shooting. I mean, that's an exception to that.
Right.
And what was the other recent incident where
Charlottesville?
The Trump extremists running over those people. That's another example of just extreme behavior. I don't approve of it if it's a Sanders supporter or a Trump supporter or anybody. But for the most part, 99.9% of the time, you're running to your neighbor's rescue.
Yeah.
And you care about your neighbor, and your neighbor cares about you, regardless of some of the little specifics. So that's the truth. You know, we're much more aligned than goods, even if our politics don't align. And even if there's some things that we find to be unkind about your neighbor's politics, they still care about you, you know, and vice versa.
It's like you make that allowance in the bubble that you're staking your claim to in the world. Like, this is my personal space, and I'll make an allowance in it because I don't like to watch another human being die, especially if you know what I mean? Like, especially if it's something that there was a time, this is crazy. See, I love this show because sometimes, like, hey, let's talk about movies, and we wind up talking about, like, all these other crazy things, and this is how artists think, this is how creative people think, this is what happens when you're just having these conversations over coffee at a Starbucks, so I feel like, why not share it with the world? But there was a time in my teenage years, I guess, I was walking home from the morning after a party, and there was, on the side of the road, there was a squirrel that had fallen from a tree, very, very high up. This thing looked like it was fucked up. Like, one of its eyes had been popped out, but was still connected by the optic nerve. You could see that one of its arms was clearly broken, and this thing was kind of just waiting to die. You know, it wasn't. And I stopped and noticed it, and I found, like, a big rock, and I figured, like, I should probably kill this thing. Like, I should. I mean, it's suffering. But then, ultimately, I couldn't do it, and I didn't know why. But I wound up walking away from it, and I know it's a squirrel, and it probably got either died not long after I left, or maybe a car ran it over not long after I was there. Who knows? But I always walked away from that wondering, like, holy shit, I couldn't put a small rodent-style animal out of its misery when it was clearly beyond help. Like, I really hope and wonder if anything to this level happens where, you know, I'm seeing these kind of things around me with people. And I thought at the time that was a really crazy and morbid thought. You know, who the fuck would think of that except for maybe someone who likes to write books or, you know, wants to make movies. But now, with some of the tensions that are flying around and some of the sort of situations that I feel like I grew up thinking we would never experience in my lifetime, I'm kind of wondering, shit, am I going to be in that test again? Like, am I going to see that kind of thing again, you know?
When we, I don't know if this is entirely connected to what you're saying, but when we see the video that came out this weekend of the Sikh that was being shouted down, and his response was, I love you.
Yeah, that was awesome. I think I shared that on my Facebook.
We don't do that. You know, I really believe there's plenty of people on the right who have a heart that as warm as that, who don't like some of the uglier words and tactics when they're applied to either side. But that's not how we argue. You know, that what we saw up there was of somebody that was not engaging in the hate. That guy wasn't even Muslim.
Yeah, no. Well, that was
he didn't take the easy route. Like, he didn't say, "Woman, hey, crazy woman, I'm a Christian.
Yeah.
Shut up, sit down." No, he didn't even do that. He didn't engage in that. Honestly, I probably would have said that, "Woman, I'm a Christian. You're a nut. Now get out of here."
Yeah.
You know, because I'm.
This is not the best way to do this.
That's. I mean, you're showing you really. You know, when you give kind, 9 times out of 10, you give kindness to somebody. You don't. They stop doing what they're doing. You know, that's why I think. you know, so much of conflict is self-created and perpetuated, because then we get ego on the line too. It's like, how dare you say that about me? Like, you know, like, look at the most sensitive president we've ever had. If you say something negative about him, he'll go after you until you're dead.
He'll start a nuclear war just to prove his point.
Well, not necessarily that, but he will never forgive. It feels like never. You need forgiveness as a human being.
Yeah.
Like, if I didn't forgive, like, all our friends do things we don't like. We do things to our friends that we don't like. And if you just, like, you own up to your mistake, you say you're sorry, or even if you give something remotely like an apology, move on. You know, like, life's too short to get entangled in, you know, petty quest for revenge. It doesn't advance us as people, really.
I mean, it's great for stories. It's great for storytelling.
It's great for Death Wish.
Yeah, which looks incredible. I cannot wait for that reboot that's coming out with Bruce Willis. Which, obvious choice, Bruce Willis.
But at the same time, I mean, if somebody kills somebody, there are certain circumstances where forgiveness gets a lot harder and maybe not necessary.
You know, like if you rape and kill the guy's wife and daughter, it's like, okay, this is beyond conversation now, dude.
That wasn't just a minor transgression. All right, let's talk movies. Let's talk, because I got 10 minutes and I'm hopping to my other fun job.
Oh, okay, cool. You want to tell us a little bit about Caesar and Otto, or do you want to tell us about more about Waken the Reaper?
I'll tell you how it all started. When I was a child, I saw Star Wars, and I knew in my heart, and it's a very familiar story, George Lucas ruined a lot of lives.
He did.
This is, you know, it was a re-release that was in the theater. I was maybe 4 years old or so. Like, this, more than anything, is what I want to do. I didn't realize, you know, you don't have any idea of what a difficult industry it is. But, you know, I started making little movies, and it's all I ever wanted to do, other than an occasional foray into, like, well, maybe I'll be an astronaut. Maybe I'll be a baseball player. That's right. I'm not going to die in these things. But I was writing stories and doing short, like, tiny short movies. And when I was 19, I began writing something that went to New Line Cinema. And I got an agent. And things were looking really good, except for between the ages of 19 and 22, I was dealing with Matt Alvarez in New Line, who went on to produce Ice Cube's movies. And I could tell what was happening. They liked the stuff, but they kept having me do rewrite. I saw the writing on the wall. This is just going to go on until I got forgotten about.
Yeah.
Because calls were getting less frequent. And I decided, let me take the bull by the horns. Let me do this on my own. And I made my first film called Dark Chamber. You know, it was originally called Under Surveillance. And I spent a long time just taking whatever money I would have used for my remaining years of college. I dropped out after 1 year. And I made this thriller that was supposed to be the answer to straight-to-DVD movies. Because, like, when I would rent a straight-to-DVD movie, it was usually sort of the same thing. Like, you know, no offense to the filmmakers of Adam and Evil, but that was it's sort of like you take the tropes of the horror genre and you put a tiny new spin on it. And I really wanted to do something that was, say, more character-based and more Hitchcockian.
Right.
And when I was done, and I was so proud that I made a film that broke the tropes and broke the familiarity of the genre, and I had characters that were developed, and, you know, granted it was very low budget and it didn't look great, but it had all those things there. And I went to the distributors, and the distributors said, this is not familiar enough. We want, like, a real, like, Friday the 13th kind of horror film. I said, I didn't want it to be a Friday the 13th. I felt like Jerry Seinfeld. So everything I did almost betrayed me. Because, like, as a viewer, I was so sick and tired of the same old, formula. And when I broke it, you know, at first the distributors, like, wanted nothing to do with it. They wanted the formula.
Right, right.
You know, we complain about it a lot, like, oh, look how that familiar, but the studios tend to want that.
Yeah.
And
people still tend to pay for it, unfortunately, also. So that's part of the problem, too.
And then they complain about it. But, I mean, like, I think people tend to prioritize production value over
story. Yeah, story, absolutely. You
know, which is disappointing. And sometimes we're guilty of that ourselves, because if something looks really good, you're like, oh, well, you almost forget what's underneath. It's like looking at a girl that's really, really attractive, but underneath, she's not a good human being.
Right, right.
We're still proud of her. It's like, look at that smile.
There are plenty of famous ones we could list right now. Plenty of them.
And so I wound up getting signed with like a company that never did this kind of thing, and he said, I like that you took a chance, and we're going to release this. And they released it with like he says, we're going to advertise this as a horror film. Is that okay? Sure, why not? And they put on this cover, this really brutal cover of, like, you know, it looks like Saw.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so there was a little blowback. It got on Netflix, but there was some blowback about, like, what is this kind of movie? This isn't what I thought it was. But
this is the cover that's on the website right now with the pentagram carved into the girl's back.
That's different than the kind of film it is. But then there was other people who really did respond to it. So that opened the door for something else. And that company asked me if I had any, you know, like, hey, we want to get away from thrillers and horrors. Do you have anything that's funny and horrific? And I had just completed that $700 feature film named Caesar and Otto. And I said, what if I put those characters in a horror film, like an Abbott Costello Meet Frankenstein? And he said, what kind of film? I'm like, hey, I know, I'm friends with Felicia Rose from Sleepaway Camp. What if it's almost like Caesar and Otto go to Sleepaway Camp?
Nice.
And that's the door for Caesar and Otto Summer Camp Massacre. And even though we've changed hands of distributors, you know, I felt like each one out has been, you know, there's smaller budgets than my first movie was, but each one out has been building upon the last. I mean, if you're not moving forward and building upon what you've done last, you know, what's the point? You know,
exactly.
I want to make movies that I, as a viewer, would really enjoy. And that's all I'm hoping for, you know, and hopefully from this point, even though I've only I've done 5 released feature films. I've only achieved a moderate level of success, you know, and I guess I can't blame anybody but myself, but I'm it's important to me that I'm not just doing the same old thing. I want to make sure that there's something fresh and something unique and something fun to this. It's like its own unique voice. So whether you love it or hate it, hopefully you can respect it.
Sure, sure.
And, you know, if I had greater production values on these, I know that these would be wider. I mean, that's a key thing.
Yeah.
Distributors looking for I think there's in the case of Netflix, they're almost mandating that every film – not Netflix, Redbox, that every film have a budget above $500,000.
Right.
For a lot of us, that's not in the realm.
Yeah, even in the world of crowdfunding, that's a little ridiculous for a lot of us. Anyway.
Limited space inside that little kiosk.
True. I hear you. Well, I mean, it sounds like you've got a lot going on. You have a lot under your belt, and you have Awaken the Reaper. Is there anything else that you're working on that you're really excited about or that you want to let people know about?
Well, tune into the Troma Now podcast, where I'm always telling stories. For example, when I was a kid, you know, I had this script, and my friend was working on a set of an independent film. And he was producing. He said, I've met some actors on this film, and I think one of them might be interested. I'm like, who is he? He said, well, he's got a tiny part in Mallrats. All right, so I look it up, and I said, this guy's not really good for this movie, you know. But do you want me to pursue? It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense that this guy won't really fit in the story. He's all right. That guy was Ben Affleck. Before Ben Affleck was Ben Affleck, I said I wasn't interested.
That's crazy, dude. And now he's Batman. That's insane.
Yeah, you know, I was a teenager, but still.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to me, that's what I think is going to happen when I'm on panels with people like you at you know, conventions out in Long Island or wherever. I'm like, oh, you know what? I just had this really cool panel with this guy. I bet you in like a couple of years, I'm gonna be like, holy fuck, that's his movie opening in the theater. And I was just chilling with him talking about Paranormal Activity last month. That's awesome.
Well, I'll tell you a couple of the quick stories where that happened. The first, in my first movie, I cast an actor named Peter Scannavito. I love this guy. He was like a young Sean Penn to me. And that was his first movie. He stars on Law and Order now.
Yeah, I was going to say, is he in the trailer for The Chamber?
Gets the pentagram on his hand. He's on Law and Order. He's the star. He's the weekly star of Law and Order. And in summer camp, there was a character that was written as Italian. And I'm like, well, this guy's African-American. I don't care. He's great. He's really unique. And I'm going to rewrite the character a tiny bit. All he had to do was like change one line. That's Trey Byers. He stars in Empire now. I've given the first acting job The two people have gone off to be famous. And my question is, when is it my turn?
I was going to say, it all happens in threes, man. So it's either the next one's going to pull you with or you're the next one. We'll see which one it turns out to be. But I think everybody should go check out fourthhorizoncinema.com. Check out the posters and the trailers for all the movies that Dave's got going on here. And you know, hopefully we'll wind up on a panel again sometime soon up in Long Island. They have a lot of conventions every year. So I'm sure we'll keep running in the same circles. And thanks a lot for doing this, man. I appreciate you hanging out at the Hall and Iron for a little while and talking movies and stuff.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, we'll have to do this again sometime.
You've been listening to the Hollow Nine Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. That's the word hollow, the number 9, INE. Now broadcasting from our new home on the web, hollow9.com, where you can find info on all of our awesome programming as well as the team behind the shows. Leave us your feedback, join in the conversation, and be a part of the action. Find the Hollow Nine Network on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. Rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you find your podcasts. Email us at info@hollow9.com or at hollow9podcast@gmail.com. Join in the fun. Hollow 9.